Hello, and welcome back to Better with Becky, a show for anyone on the journey to a stronger self and a better life. Happy weekend, if that's when you're listening, or maybe you've made it through your weekend and you're back driving to work or doing some chores, whatever it is. But welcome back to the show. My name is Becky, and I run a strength training program called Build with Becky. My overall business, though, is a little broader, just really all things self-improvement, growth, development, whether that's physical, mental, or emotional. I'll talk a little bit about my strength training program at the end, if that's something you're interested in. But today, I thought that I would welcome you back with the topic that we'll get into in a little bit that I'm kind of jokingly calling lightly languishing, and then let's whoop your life. So that will tie into my favorite goal setting methodology. I know there are a couple of new Better with Becky subscribers this week that are getting started. And so they're top of mind for me. And I'm thinking of just what I always did with new clients at the gym. And then also what I did with my beta cohort of Build with Becky testers when we started the program all together a couple years back. And what I really would still recommend and even like to use myself as kind of just a way to get a little bit of personal clarity around your deeper whys for starting a program. So that's just a little preview of the topic that we'll get into in a bit. But basically, if you're a little bit like, all right, I've had a great summer, I've been out of routine, it's back to school season, I'm kind of feeling over whatever this vibe is. I feel like I'm almost like lightly languishing a little bit, for lack of a better way to term it. Then let's get clear on what would feel better. And that we'll do with this methodology that is called WHOOP. That's very scientific, over 20 years of research backing it. Very simple, very approachable, and gives a lot of clarity. So we'll get into that in just a little bit. But first, I thought I'd just do a couple of life updates since last week. If you've been listening the last couple of weeks, or even if you haven't and you're new here, like I said, welcome. I've been kind of playing around with the idea of prepping for a bodybuilding show, or at least learning more about bodybuilding. Oh, iPad down. Don't know if you could hear that. And learning some more advanced training strategies and nutritional strategies around that. That kind of ties into a little bit of a life shift for me, speaking of kind of like that back to school season and getting back into routine. So 8 years after retiring from classroom teaching, I'm finally embracing that retirement this year. And I'm also about a year into having my own custom app that Justin built me for my strength training program. And so I just have a lot more free time, and I've been, I would say, kind of lightly languishing about what to do with that time and energy and space that I've freed up in my life, which was all by design. But regardless, now here I am, 40 years old, without really a thing I have to clock in and do every day. So given that huge privilege, for one thing, I want to acknowledge that, but having all that time and energy and space to do really anything I want to do, when I think of my perfect day, I really do love to wake up and read and learn something, then eventually get some movement, usually strength training or conditioning of some sort, sometimes mobility or, you know, recovery oriented things around breathing or yoga or mindfulness, whatever it might be, maybe a group fitness experience if that sounds fun that day. And then usually recovery and mindful nutrition. And I love to share those things with other people. So I do that through my Beckygram, which is a newsletter you can sign up for. Just go to my website, which is, for that particular spot, gram.betterwithbecky.com. And you can sign up for that as a little newsletter to get that in your inbox. If you like to kind of maybe not live on social media, that's kind of my idea behind that, that you could get that in your inbox and not have to always log into an app that, frankly, kind of steals our life and energy away. But regardless, that's kind of my perfect day. So if that's true, and I love training, I love mindful eating, and I love sharing that process, then something like prepping for a bodybuilding show really sounds interesting to me, partly just the curiosity of like, how far can you take body composition manipulation? And then partly just because it sounds fun. So the last couple of weeks, I've talked about this, taking like two steps forward, three steps back, a leap forward, a crawl back, because despite that interest, I would not say that bodybuilding is just this neutral, straightforward endeavor. In fact, if you just for a minute pause and think about like, what comes to mind for you when you think of bodybuilding? I don't know what comes to mind for you, but I have learned by telling friends and family and acquaintances over the last few weeks that there is a wide swath of what comes to mind for people and that most of it is not positive. So, you know, it could be something like you visualize Arnold Schwarzenegger flexing. That's relatively benign, although maybe then in the back of your mind, you're thinking steroid use. That doesn't seem like the healthiest. Or maybe if you think about female bodybuilders, you're thinking extreme levels of leanness or hypermuscularity, which might also be through performance-enhanced drugs, PEDs. Obviously not like the healthiest, most sustainable thing. So then that might trigger some amount of judgment or concern or just confusion even, given I seem to be so into sustainability and longevity and kind of doing things, quote unquote, right in a way that will serve you for the long term, right? So I think that's completely valid that I would get some questioning or negative reactions or pushback or confusion from that. So one thing I just want to clarify right up front is that I think that what I do as a fitness professional and the design of my program, Build with Becky, and the greater ethos of Better with Becky is very much in that sustainable realm of making sure you're doing progressive strength training to shore up having enough muscle on your frame as you age so that you can be functional and feel your best as you go through all these phases of life, from maybe, for example, prenatal, postnatal, perimenopause, menopause, postmenopause. The female body just goes through so many changes. So to have an anchor of strength as you go through that and as your hormones shift, and that all impacts your bone density, which in turn impacts just kind of your resilience in life. Hopefully you're not going to take a tumble and have a fracture to deal with if you're strength training. But that aside, I also hope that one of the biggest messages I send that's, I would say, both personal and professional is that I really value a growth mindset. And I really never want anybody who does anything that I create, my Build with Becky program, or just maybe follow some advice that I share on social media, whatever it might be. I really never want somebody to fall into a lulled sense of like a fixed mindset around this is the way. This is the way to be healthy. This is the way to eat. This is the way to lift. This is the way to train. Because I personally am always evolving in my perspective, in my education, in the things I expose myself to. And I like that I've walked through all these different versions of training and nutrition and lifestyle and behavior and mindset around everything, because I'm not the same person that I used to be. You know, I used to be a teacher. I used to just wake up anxious and go through my days getting more and more stressed and really just left and right have a lot of triggers in my day that didn't feel good physiologically or mentally, emotionally. And eventually I had to become aware enough of that to make a change. And COVID helped with that because the world paused and I realized, hey, now would be a great time to make a change. And that's when I became a trainer. And then luckily I chose something that for me is very much anchored in the body. And I learned around the same time as I studied mindfulness that the body is so much wiser than the brain when it comes to really sensing and feeling where your nervous system is at. So one thing I love about what I do now, and it doesn't even really matter that it's strength training, it just so happens to be that I chose strength training as my vehicle for growth mindset, is that I'm able through movement to kind of get out of my head and into my body. And as I go through these movements, whether it's something challenging like a chin-up or a heavy deadlift or a max effort squat or whatever it is, I have to focus on that really challenging physiological movement, and that gets me out of my head. And that just kind of the outcome of that, the side effect of that, is a calmer nervous system. So that's something that I just have loved playing with. But over the years, I've gotten inspiration from different coaches, from my different certifications and ongoing education, and I've made it my own. But then I also hope that people know that the product that I've created, while very much recommendable, especially for anyone who's getting going with strength training, or maybe even somebody who isn't, like, their perfect day doesn't revolve around movement and fitness, because let's be honest, that's totally fair. It's not like because I love that and because I've made that my life's work, everybody loves that. Some people do want to just, you know, make sure they're covering their bases, getting full body workouts a couple times a week, kind of like paying into a bank account that will ensure that they're safe as they get older, they're more resilient, they have that muscle on their frame. That's completely valid. But since I am the person who has literally structured my life around this work and is fascinated by it, I hope it makes sense that I would probably have that interest and passion in doing the next thing, in exploring the next level, in diving deeper and evolving as I go, and hopefully also demystifying that process a little bit and maybe translating over some of the takeaways that I learned for the general population and how they could implement some of those learnings, while also maybe exposing, hey, these parts really are kind of fucked up about bodybuilding. Like, this sport does have red flags. There are a lot of performance enhancing drugs, which, side note, I hope it goes without saying, I will never take. And granted, will I be, if I choose to do this, a competitive bodybuilder? Absolutely not. I will probably get 87th place, but it won't be about being competitive with the other people on stage. It will be about the journey of preparing to do a really hard, uncomfortable thing and facing whatever comes up for me along the way. Because to be very honest, I have some history that is a little bit cause for concern when it comes to considering something like bodybuilding. You know, I've had my disordered eating days. I've gone through all of the different forms, I feel like, of diet culture, all the way through to the other end of just completely turning my back on any structured form of eating for a very long time, which was, I think, also an important piece of my puzzle, because I needed to unlearn all of the unhelpful things I had learned in order to be a more balanced, holistic, evidence-based coach for my own clients. So I did a lot of mindful and intuitive eating for several years. And then it's almost like through that, you know, you hear people talk about maybe having gut issues and maybe doing like a structured protocol with a dietitian to heal their gut. And then they're able to add those foods that gave them issues before back in and they can handle them. I almost feel that way now with approaching eating in structured ways, training in structured ways. Like, I needed to kind of have this protocol of being no structure, no plan, no form of eating, no specific form of training, because it was very structured, and that's what Build with Becky is. We'll talk about it at the end, but not structured in the sense of like aesthetic focused, more so functional focus, if that makes sense, and full body focus. But I think I needed to go through that for several years to unlearn the unhelpful practices and then also gain confidence that I know the basics. I know the evidence-based and science-based approaches, and I know how they work and show up in the body. And I'm also now very resourced with the tools to reapproach specific advanced training protocols or specific advanced forms of nutrition that could lead to different outcomes should I choose to explore those. And those outcomes could, again, be strength focused, like I tend to do with Build with Becky, or perhaps for a short time boxed limited season, maybe they'll be aesthetic focused to just see what can be accomplished with a physique. And, you know, that's not the same thing as saying like a different, maybe, the words for bodybuilding are not my favorite. Like the word tone, I hate that word because it really just means your muscle is showing more because your body fat level is lower. But that tends to be the word people think of, or sometimes people use the word shredded, which seems even more intense and unhelpful. But basically, yeah, when you don't have a lot of body fat and you do maintain or build your muscle and you maybe manipulate your water and your salt, your physique can look very different. And it's kind of fascinating to learn those things, both for your own curiosity, if you're someone like me whose world revolves around fitness, and because it's an advanced experiential form of learning, so that if I ever have a client who has an aesthetic goal, I can maybe for once, because to be honest, I struggle with this, not judge that, but hold space for that and maybe even be a helpful resource for that. Because to be honest, I talk a lot about body neutrality and how, you know, no matter what size you are, no matter how you show up in this world, no matter what you look like or how strong you are, your body is not better or worse based on being like bigger, smaller, stronger, weaker, obviously different colors, different heights, different shapes, different backgrounds, whatever. Your body's your body and it's neutral. It's frankly the least interesting thing about you, probably. At the same time, I think everybody should also embrace that they have body autonomy. So, you know, if you want to have stronger shoulders, you can build that. If you want to have a bigger butt, you can build that. The only thing to be aware of is you can't spot reduce. So you can't just like do 1,000 sit-ups and have a tinier stomach. That actually doesn't even make sense if you think about it. If you do 1,000 sit-ups, you're probably going to build your abs, not make them smaller. So spot reduction is not a thing. But, you know, you have that autonomy in your body. And like, let's say you build those bigger shoulders, that doesn't make you a better person because your shoulders are bigger. Obviously, that's a neutral thing, but it was also your choice to do that. And that's 100% valid. And nobody needs to judge that. So I think that there's a lot of pieces of the puzzle here. But what's ultimately keeping me interested in bodybuilding, despite the valid like concern that there are red flags in this particular corner of the fitness industry, and despite the fact that I've now done consults with two coaches, both of whom have not been a fit, and if anything have made me almost give up on even being interested in this because there were so many red flags, I'm still interested despite several friends raising concerns and people questioning either like, why are you interested in this, or why haven't you started yet if you say you're interested. Despite all of that, I know when I'm really reflective, and this will get into the WHOOP goal stuff that we talk about later, because I literally use that on myself to make sure I deep dove into my deeper whys. I know that this feels supportive in this season of my life, and that this is coming from a place of curiosity, and that I'm approaching it with intentionality, with a heavy dose of cautiousness, and with the ability to pull the plug if it ever gets to an unhealthy, disordered place that doesn't feel supportive for my long-term goals. So, you know, I guess I share all of that as a little life update just to say, I think I said this before too in a previous episode, but when you have a new goal, don't be afraid or concerned if it takes some time. You know, there's absolutely a phase in goal setting of pre-contemplation. And it's like before you even are ready to make the commitment. You have to really think about it a lot. And you you deep inside of you are the only person who knows what you really feel drawn to and why you feel drawn to it. And it's even okay if there are a couple maybe like problematic sides to why you're drawn to it. Like in my case, I'm sure that there's a bit of like perfectionistic, people-pleasing not enoughness from my childhood that ties into like, oh yeah, this reminds me of when I was striving to like be a good Christian girl and be a little perfectionist gymnast up on the balance beam and then be a very smiley cheerleader dancer in high school. Like there are echoes of that for sure. And some of that I think did lead into some body dysmorphia and some disordered eating tendencies. And it's also true that years later, I'm a different person and I've gotten a lot of education and I've unlearned a lot of those tendencies. And I love training for training's sake. And I love learning advanced nutritional strategies and learning how to manipulate body composition and pairing those together to then share takeaways with people. And, you know, do I need to be aware of the history and the potential dark side of the industry? Absolutely. But could it still be possible to do a thing that maybe looks a little like, whoa, you sure about that? to other people, but to do it from a place of intrinsic curiosity and not externality and validation from others, even though there might be a little bit of that, because guess what? We're human. It's okay to have an aesthetic goal. It's okay to enjoy an aesthetic outcome and result, especially if you pair it with that neutrality of knowing it doesn't make you a better person to be a smaller, more shredded version of yourself. It's just maybe a time box season, maybe an advanced goal, and maybe a way to continue having a growth mindset. Probably not for everyone, and that's okay. I wouldn't recommend it for everyone. I would recommend my program for everyone. And that's another thing. You know, my program is like my professional product and brand. And this is more of a personal curiosity and area and edge for growth. So just like maybe I would have a goal for a season of training for a marathon. And is that the healthiest thing? Probably not for most people, to be honest. I know like our society tends to think it is because it's an endurance sport, but most people are not set up to train for an endurance sport of that magnitude. So this will again get back into the WHOOP goals in a little bit, but probably a healthier goal for most people would be add cardio to their life and in a small, structured way, like take a morning walk every day. And then eventually maybe add some jogging intervals. And maybe like 6 months later, that leads into interest in a 5K. And maybe a few years down the line, they've done a 10K, a 10 miler, a half marathon, and maybe a marathon. But honestly, there's so many steps in between there that it might not be the healthiest thing. Yet here I live in Orlando, Florida, where Run Disney happens like five times a year. And I will tell you, I see people finish marathons all the time that like Coach Becky kind of cringes at seeing that and is like, ooh, why? But Becky, just me, is kind of like, fuck yeah, that's incredible. That was an ambitious goal. They set their mind to it and they did it. And I bet that taught them a lot about if they could show up in their life in that way, how could they show up outside of their workouts in a stronger way with more endurance, with more follow through. So this might be a little bit like that. It might not be like the healthiest, most sustainable goal, but it's time boxed. It's a journey. It's an advanced strategy to learn through experiencing it. It's mindset work. And all of that appeals to me, even with some of those darker sides to it. So I guess I share all of that just because one, I like sharing the journey, and I think it's important to just be open and honest about where my interests lie and how, you know, there is sometimes a difference between what's like healthy for longevity and for the long term versus what's serving you in the short term as a goal here and now. And it's okay for those contrasts to kind of both be true at the same time, and that for there to be a little bit of cognitive dissonance there, and maybe even for allowing for the possibility that your goal might trigger something in someone else. You know, like some of what I think I'm experiencing, I think I do have people in my life that understandably have prior associations with bodybuilding and therefore concerns about it. But I also think that there might be some stuff coming up for some people in my life who are just, you know, I don't know what, but something comes up for them when they think about me pursuing that goal. And that's honestly completely fine and happens all the time. I kind of think we're all just constantly, I remember back a few years ago, I did an EMDR intensive. EMDR, this is a little side detour, stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. It's a form of therapy where you use eye movement to kind of recall painful memories and then reprocess them. And I remember there was some concept in EMDR called the trauma triangle. And it was essentially just this idea of like, there are maybe three people and they kind of just walk around triggering each other and taking on these different roles of like the victim and the triggerer. And I forget the other one, but I kind of think that happens a lot in life where like, we don't even mean to, but we hear something from someone else and we react to it. And we might think like, oh, I'm just reacting and sharing my opinion. But really, maybe what that person told us kind of triggered something in us, whether conscious or not. And we're kind of then projecting out our own stuff onto other people. And I don't think that that's necessarily always problematic. I think it's actually probably at least 50% of human communication. But I do think it's really interesting to have that awareness that I didn't used to have that awareness. I used to just always assume there was like something wrong with me, some reason I was getting the messages I was getting from other people, and that somehow I was maybe at fault or to blame or wrong somehow. And I think especially when it comes to bodybuilding, it's easy to think that could be the case if I get pushback, if I get a negative response or just confusion from people. But I also think it's possible that it's just, you know, me talking about doing this triggers other people's minds and hearts around their own journeys with anything, health, fitness, nutrition. Maybe even just like they're remembering an article they saw, or they have a preconceived idea about anabolic steroid use or something like that. Who knows? But really, that's like, imagine there's like a backpack full of like stuff, and it's like that person hears my thing and like tries to give me this backpack full of like heavy, weighty stuff. But like, I can choose to put that backpack down. That's not my backpack. I don't have to carry that around. And so that's been really freeing too, to do a little processing this week and realize it's okay for there to be external noise when you have a goal, and to still, from an internal locus of control, know that it's the thing that you want to push forward with and to stay committed to it anyway. So just sharing that for whatever it's worth. Maybe you have had a goal where you are just excited about it, and then this kind of again ties into the goal setting that we'll get to in just a minute, but you start sharing it out and then you get pushed back and you kind of feel like uninspired all of a sudden, or even like you want to quit or not do the goal. I would say that's actually kind of like a golden opportunity to go even deeper and to figure out like what of that is external versus internal, and then to go a little deeper with what your why is. And, you know, it could be you decide it's not for you and you back out for any reason and you don't really owe anyone an explanation. But could also be that that's not your stuff. That's somebody else's stuff. And you can put the backpack down and you can continue forward knowing that from your internal locus of control, the goal is serving you in this season of life. So that's something to think about. Then related to the bodybuilding stuff, just in case I decide to move forward with it, I've been getting baseline testing, and I've talked about that the last couple episodes. But in particular, I got a lot of blood work done. This all started a few weeks to even like a month ago when I got my blood work done for my physical. And I noticed that while my cholesterol had improved, my LDL was still a little bit elevated. So I just wanted to get some advanced blood work done to know whether that was problematic or whether within kind of the scope of all of my other numbers, maybe that's just my set point. And since like my triglycerides are low and my HDL is high, maybe it just isn't that problematic for me. So I got an advanced lipid panel done, have not yet gotten my results, but I'll keep you posted. And then apart from that, I had also mentioned to my doctor that I might do a bodybuilding prep. And she's an awesome doctor. I talked a few episodes ago about kind of advocating for yourself and looking and looking and looking until you find a medical provider that you really feel comfortable with. And thankfully, I have found that. And she was supportive, but also like, hey, let's get baseline of everything. Let's get blood work. Let's make sure we test pre-post so that we get you back to all the healthy levels. And I was like, absolutely, would love medical supervision if I choose to do this goal. So we also went ahead and got a lot of hormone testing done. So we measured my testosterone level, estradiol, progesterone, my T3, T4, T3 reverse, which I've never heard of, my cortisol level, which is the stress hormone, my insulin, vitamin D, C-reactive protein, which is a test that measures inflammation level in the body, my TSH, ferritin, hemoglobin A1C, which is a marker for kind of like if it's above a certain level, it would show that you might be like becoming pre-diabetic. So you want to keep that under a certain level. A comprehensive metabolic panel, CBC with differential, which I kind of forget what that is, but that's kind of a normal one. So yeah, I have a lot of tests that I've done that are going to be coming in. And I'm interested in this for two reasons. One, like I said, and like she recommended, if I'm going to do a bodybuilding prep, getting to really low body fat levels can understandably mess with your hormones. Because if you think about really what the body is designed to do, it's ensure propagation of your genetic material through procreation, right? So if you're super low body fat, it's probably not a good time to get pregnant because you need a lot of fuel to grow and support a fetus. So it's very likely that you lose your cycle if you get low enough body fat. So like essential levels for women, I think are like 10 to 12%. For men, 3 to 5%. Below that, it's kind of like things start shutting down. And even above that, you might lose your cycle. So we want to see like what my baseline is and then make sure we get back to baseline eventually. But I also just separately from that, am interested kind of in that other part of me that's really into health and longevity and sustainability. I just want to know what my baseline is, period, as a 40-year-old woman, because chances are I'm getting closer to perimenopause. That's when levels start to kind of fluctuate. That's what leads to a lot of the perimenopausal symptoms that women experience. And so I think it'd be neat in a couple years when things get a little wonky to be able to have that baseline, get tested again, and see where I'm at, if that makes sense. So those are a couple just little life updates when it comes to bodybuilding and related things. But for now, let's get into Whoop. All right. So Whoop, like I mentioned and previewed, is a strategy that I love to use for goal setting. And I have a post on this that I shared this week, and I kind of walk you through it. I'll link to that in the show notes. But I think what happened for me was two things. One, I had a couple people reach out that wanted to start Build with Becky. So I was thinking of just kind of like things to get them going. Two, September hit, so new month energy. I always like kind of setting monthly goals apart from but related to my training. So like if I'm doing the Build with Becky program, I also always encourage people to have some play at the end of their workouts. And that might be something like working towards a bodyweight chin up or doing some kind of fun crow pose in yoga, whatever it is. But I think I always like to track that on a monthly basis. And the program goes for 5 weeks at a time. It may or may not always line up with the month. So it's just another way I like to have goals. But regardless, the calendar turned. I was feeling that new month energy. Some new people were joining the program. And I also, I think from getting some of that pushback about bodybuilding and having been for like a month looking into it and now having disqualified two coaches that I might work with because of various red flags, I was just kind of feeling, like I said, it's kind of joking, but kind of true. Like I was just feeling a little light languishing when it came to like, what is my goal here? Why am I interested in this? And I knew that what I would do with a client who was feeling that way is get clear on the goal by going a little bit deeper. And so I thought of, okay, what is the goal strategy that I use with clients? Whoop, why don't I just do it myself? And so I talked a little bit about this strategy and I link to it in this post, but basically Whoop is this science-based mental strategy and it's designed by a German psychologist whose last name I am completely going to butcher. Gabrielle, it looks like Oettingen. I'm sure that's not it, but basically she's really fun and I link to a podcast interview that she did with Shankar Vedantam, which he's the host of the Hidden Brain podcast, which I love. But basically, I feel like her strategy is part of why it functions so well is that it kind of goes beyond our typical American mindset when it comes to goals, where we kind of like, you know, the American dream. If you can dream it, you can do it. And we're just very positive and dreamy about things, but then do we actually do the things that we dream about? And I don't know about you, but I have found, whether it's with this bodybuilding thing or with other goals, that sometimes I almost like to keep my goal a little bit of a secret because I feel like as soon as I start talking about it and getting excited about it, I sort of accidentally invite other people's opinions. And they might push back on it. And that might be kind of demotivating and kind of like my motivation then will drop. So basically this methodology, I feel like it's interesting because she's German and I have a very good German friend, Eva. Eva, I've been meaning to text you back for months. She's done Build with Becky as well. So I'll probably send her this episode. But I absolutely love Eva. She lived with my, at the time, best friend, Joanna, in high school. And it was such a formative time. We were all so young, but I remember like, we were very like bubbly, happy, typical American teenagers, you know? And Eva was this much more like concrete, realistic, almost stoic German friend. And she was fantastic and we loved her. But I think it was just like our first exposure to somebody from another culture who wasn't so Pollyanna, like, if you can dream it, you can do it. She was much more like, yeah, that probably would work. Or no, I think that's a bad idea. And just very like one note. And I loved that because it was honestly true. She was very realistic. And usually she wouldn't get overly excited about things that weren't likely to happen. She was very level-headed and realistic about things that were possible, but she could kind of always see the potential obstacles and kind of get around them with a plan, which is exactly what this psychologist suggests. So her research basically pushes back on the camp of positive psychology, which I link to that if you're not sure what that is, but basically positive psychology really emphasizes optimism, strengths, well-being, and it's, you know, sounds really, really lovely, but she found that it doesn't always really translate into action and that, in fact, dreamers are often not doers. So it's almost like we have these goals and as we dream about them psychologically, it's almost like we put a check mark next to it, like, I dreamed it, I did it, check. And I actually have experienced this as a trainer. I would have clients sometimes when I was at the gym that really couldn't afford in-person training, but they'd maybe like scrape together their money to afford like a 30-minute session every other week, which honestly was like the worst possible scenario, because this is what would happen. They would decide that that was what they were going to do. They'd sign up for that. And then I don't know why, but it was kind of like this American positive psychology idea. Like, they were so optimistic about what working with a coach would add to their experience that they just kind of outsourced the entire goal to that 30-minute session every other week. But guess what? One 30-minute session every other week is definitely not going to be enough to move the needle physically, or probably honestly, like behaviorally, mentally, emotionally. And so I remember one time I had a client who, she used to go to the gym like every single day. We would see her there. And she wasn't doing the most effective things. She was kind of a cardio queen, but she was there every day at like 7 p.m. And that was about the time the trainers left the gym. But we knew that she was there for like 30 to 60 minutes every day. And then she signed up to do training with me, barely, like I said, could really make ends meet to afford it, but signed up for a 30-minute session every other week. And I noticed that she stopped coming to the gym on her own. And it was like the worst possible scenario, because, you know, she needed to continue to have that intrinsic reason for showing up. And she also just frankly needed that time and the routine and the habit and everything. But instead, she kind of almost like mentally put that check mark there because she had the wish, she signed up for the training, and she felt like, there, my outcome is assured. But really, it wasn't, because she didn't think about all the obstacles that could get in her way. So that's what the psychologist suggests. She uses the acronym WHOOP. And the first two parts of WHOOP are really kind of the typical American dream goal setting. So the W is wish. What's like your most pressing wish when it comes to your health and well-being? Identify what you really, really want. And then the O is outcome. So you really kind of like marinate in the good, positive, dreamy vibes of like, what would be the best possible outcome of achieving that wish? Why does that wish matter to you? So that's all like the good, positive psychology vibes. But then the next O and the P are the very like German practical, hey, let's make this real, let's make this concrete parts that are very key. So the second O stands for obstacle. And this is where you get real about what might get in the way of your goal. And this is a key thing, because I remember I'd sit down with clients and they'd be like, oh yeah, well, I just don't have time. I have to pick up the kids. I don't have childcare. I'm exhausted. Like all these things that they would say would be external obstacles. And those are valid. Like, it's probably true that they're exhausted and that they don't have time and that the kids take up their energy. And it's also the case that really, it's kind of tough love, but it's kind of true. Those are really just prioritization. You know, like we find time to watch TV, we find time to hang out with a friend, we find time to go get drinks on the weekend, but we can't find time for our fitness. Like, that is a little bit of tough love to say, but that's prioritization. We can find a way to prioritize our fitness if we so choose. So you have to go beyond the external, basically, to get to what the inner obstacle is inside of you. And this is tricky because no one really wants to go there. That's the pretty uncomfortable, sometimes darker, or just like awkward thoughts and feelings. So, you know, like when it came to bodybuilding, it was interesting because part of the reason I knew I did want to keep being interested in it was that all the obstacles I was experiencing were actually external. It was like other people's opinions, other people's thoughts, the idea, that one's a little internal, the idea of the dark side of this industry, that's starting to get more internal. But none of, for me personally, I didn't have interior obstacles. My interior ecosystem was like curious, excited, interested, drawn towards it. So I kind of knew, okay, this might not be my stuff. This might be that backpack of other people's stuff. And I can put that external backpack down and I can stay cued into my internal. Now, will there be internal obstacles to that goal? Absolutely. I'm sure I will have days, especially since most of bodybuilding is really nutrition and dieting down to be stage lean. I'm sure if I choose to do this, I will have days where I'm just so hungry and want nothing more than a giant cheeseburger. And the internal obstacle will just be like the thoughts and feelings around hunger and food and whatever comes up with that, you know? But that's the internal, not the external. So for you, if you're new to maybe lifting, let's say you're considering doing Build with Becky or you're getting started with Build with Becky, I would say it's really important to go through and identify those internal obstacles, because then the P of Whoop, the last letter, is plan. And this is kind of that old adage of like, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. But basically, it's just once you know what those internal obstacles are, you decide on kind of an if-then plan that when those obstacles show up, this is what you'll do. So let's say for you, the obstacle is, again, you can't blame tiredness or kids or whatever, but you could blame like the thought, I don't have enough support and I feel exhausted. That thought could be your obstacle, or the feeling of overwhelm could be your obstacle. So then let's say, what's the plan for that? If I feel overwhelmed, then I will, and maybe it's literally something like ask my partner for support or schedule childcare 2 times a week or ask a friend to watch the kids. You know, only you really knows, but it's very concrete and very doable, but also something that you just don't automatically do unless you kind of sit down and really write it out. And I do recommend actually open, I think I link to the free Whoop goals guide, which I also send out with every Build with Becky program, and encourage people to reflect and set a new goal at the end of each program. So it's absolutely free. You can download it or look at it and write in your own notebook or whatever. But I do recommend physically writing this out, because basically when you physically write and not type, I find your brain kind of slows down to the pace of your pencil or pen moving across the page. And going back to like nervous system regulation, it kind of calms you down to slow down, really identify what your big wish is, why that really matters to you, what would the best outcome of that be. Get clear on what those inner obstacles, thoughts, and feelings usually are going to be. And then just really come up with a couple of plans for when those internal obstacles arise and what you'll do with it. So when it comes to Whoop, especially the W, the wish, one thing that I would also add to it is maybe a strategy called the 5 whys. And I might have to do a post on that this week, but this is a strategy that I learned from my nutrition certification. And I think it's also really good, kind of like getting to the internal obstacles. You want to get to a really significant wish. And also, you know, this is time box. This is maybe every month or so that you set a Whoop goal. So it's not like you have to be married to this forever, but just right now for the next 4 weeks, realistically, what's something you really want? And, you know, when I was at the gym, a lot of times it seemed like the people starting had a kind of surface level wish. But when I used the 5 whys, I would find out, oh, there's something much deeper here. And that's really good to uncover, because that's going to be a much deeper, more intrinsic motivation than anything kind of shallow and external. So here's an example. Let's say I'm sitting down with a client and they say, you know, I think I want to start your program because I want to lose weight. That's a very common one. I'm not saying that's everybody's goal. Absolutely not. Some people want to build muscle, but let's just use that as an example today. So maybe a client says, I want to lose weight. And I respond with the first, oh, okay, so why? And they say, oh, well, you know, because I would feel more comfortable in my skin if I lost weight. I'm like, oh, okay, say more about that. That's the second why. Well, you know, 15 years ago, I was an athlete, and it was just like a time of my life that when I look back at pictures of that, I remember the community I was in, like I was on a team, I had this community, and I felt really confident and like I had kind of a purpose and a direction, and I want to feel that way again. Okay. So tell me more about like when you identified as an athlete and the community and the relationships in your life, why was that meaningful to you? So there's another why. And maybe at that point it gets into, oh, well, you know, at that time I really felt like I was hitting my stride, like physically, but also mentally, emotionally. I was like getting my degree and I met my partner. And now fast forward 15, 20 years, we've had children and our oldest is actually getting married next month and they want to start a family. And I want to be there for my grandchildren. And suddenly I'm able to zoom out and show them, oh, okay, so you want to be around for your grandchildren. That is a much deeper wish than I want to lose weight, right? And granted, in this next 4 weeks, just a reminder, you actually can't control the scale, but what you could do is commit to not only your sessions with me, but coming on your days off to get movement, making sure you're hydrating, prioritizing getting enough sleep at night, hitting some protein and fiber. And you know, it's not going to be the whole way there in a month, but I'll tell you up front, your sleep will improve, your energy will go up, and you'll already start feeling stronger for sure within the first 4 weeks. What do you think about that? What's that feel like? And usually that resonates a lot with people because when they get to their deeper why, they also might be able to tap more readily into what would be the best thing about that, showing up in their life, in their relationships, in a way that is their best self. That's a hugely meaningful outcome. And they're usually also, they've gotten to that deeper level so they can identify, okay, well, obstacle wise, my inner obstacles are probably going to be thoughts and feelings that come up around maybe restriction or energy or time management, whatever it might be. But, you know, I see that coming. Let's map it out. Let's make a plan. When that happens, I'm going to actually right now go home and talk to my partner about how I want to prioritize this and how I might need help with meal prep or with just encouragement to get to the gym. If you're not waiting for me on a particular day, it's not a session day, but I still want to get my movement. And I bet, yeah, with a plan, I bet I could overcome that. And maybe even within 4 weeks, it's going to feel really good. And then I'll be ready for my next WHOOP goal to push a little further. So I think that a combination of this identifying the wish and the biggest outcome and doing that through really asking yourself why, and getting to those deeper inner reasons to then tap into potential inner obstacles and create a plan around them. I think it's a very simple approach, especially when you look at the free WHOOP goal guide, which again, I'll link to this whole post. And then inside of the post, all of that is linked. It's very simple and very approachable. And if you want, you can add on a layer like making sure it's a SMART goal. So maybe if you're into that, which I'm not so much these days, side note, because we had to do it a lot as teachers. And so I'm just kind of burned out on SMART goals, but maybe that works really well for your brain. And if so, you might want to then kind of go from this higher philosophical level to a more strategic objective level of making sure that you make your goal specific and measurable and action oriented, realistic and time bound. And part of why I like doing WHOOP on a monthly basis is it's kind of naturally time bound to about a month at a time. But you know, you might want to add something measurable. You might, and again, make that measurable thing something you control. So don't make it like the number on the scale, make it something like how many times you show up to work out that week, or how much water you're drinking, or how many hours of sleep you're at least targeting. You can't control your sleep, but you can get in bed early enough that you allow yourself to potentially get enough sleep, that kind of thing. So I think, like I said, this particular strategy, it's backed by about 20 years of scientific research with people of all walks of life. It has been used a lot for health attainment goals, like, you know, achieving a healthier diet or becoming more physically active, if weight loss is a goal, it helps people with that, but it can also be used for kind of anything in your life if you think about it. So if you have a behavior that you want to change or a habit you want to start or stop, even if it's something to do with like academic performance, maybe you try this for a month and then you realize, oh, you know what? My child struggles with this particular class and has ADHD. Maybe I could help them set a WHOOP goal too. And I would actually use this thinking back even further with my students to kind of set these short-term goals that were very concrete and very achievable. So that's a strategy that, you know, when I think of the couple people that are getting started this week with Build with Becky, ultimately, I think what drives us to make changes in our lives is that it becomes more painful to stay the same than to go through the potential discomfort of making a change. So I think it's important to get clear on what that contrast is and to kind of close the gap. And I think you could do that a variety of ways. It could be something like WHOOP. It could be a SMART goal. It could be the 5 whys. It could be a combination. But I think you definitely want to do something whenever you're starting out with a new goal to get clear on it, to make sure it's coming from an intrinsic place, to have an if-then plan if and when obstacles come up, and to just make it really time-boxed and doable but significant for you. So that's what I would recommend when it comes to setting goals. All right, and then we'll just finish up as usual with a couple of things in the news. And these two articles, really my goal with these is to show, especially with the first one, how the headlines that we see in like health and fitness and especially nutrition tend to look kind of like splashy and like black and white in their messaging, but they actually tend to be pretty, when you dig deeper, they're a little bit often hiding the fact that most nutritional research is not causal, if that makes sense. So let's just dive into this one as an example. So the first article is on sweetener use, and I'll link to this in the show notes, but it says sweeteners can harm cognitive health equivalent to 1.6 years of aging, study finds. So this past week, this study came out and there's a few different headlines about it, but it's basically saying that people who consumed these sweeteners, excuse me, and they did a study of like over 12,000 Brazilian adults, and it was assessed through self-reported questionnaires. But basically the key takeaway was that frequent consumption of common artificial sweeteners may accelerate cognitive decline around 1.6 years extra over an 8-year period. However, this is kind of the point I want to drive home. This study was observational and included self-reported diet data. So basically it's based on questionnaires, which are prone to recall bias and over or under reporting. Also, the study did not account for any kind of confounding factors like, did these people exercise? How is their sleep quality? How's their overall diet quality? Because we really, in the absence of knowing those details, we don't really know how sweetener use influences cognitive health, which kind of gets into my next point that a lot of these studies, when they're observational in nature, we don't know the directionality of epidemiological research. So basically, as an example, like let's say that researchers find that people who drink more coffee tend to also have higher rates of stress. And so maybe like there's a flashy headline that's like, people who drink more coffee are more stressed out. And you're like, oh yeah, that feels truthy. I should drink less coffee to be less stressed out. But really, if you think about it, that's just a correlation. It's not saying that drinking more coffee leads to higher stress. In fact, it could be just the opposite. It could be that stressed out people reach for coffee more often. So you just really don't know unless there's an experimental study where people are randomly assigned and there's a control group that's called a randomized control trial. You don't know in just an observational study what's really going on there. And these headlines get splashy because they look like they're causation, but it's really just causation because they don't really highlight all the factors and confounders and potential reverse causation and directionality that is involved. So when it comes to like this particular article, on the one hand, I will say anecdotally that I tend to do fine with like a diet soda. And of course, if I'm going to drink soda, I'm probably going to do a diet soda, not a full sugar soda for obvious reasons. But like, let's say I'm going to Starbucks, for example, I actually do prefer like one pump of full sugar syrup to like three pumps of sugar-free vanilla. And I think that's just for me personally, gastrointestinally driven. Like I don't digest the sugar-free substitutes as well. So I'd rather have just less sugar, but it's natural and it's quickly digest and used, and I would probably time it like pre-workout so that I have some quick digesting carbs ready to use versus worry so much about it and go for an ultra processed substitute, if that makes sense. So there might be, you know, some kind of balance takeaway there where maybe, yeah, we should reduce some ultra processed sweeteners, especially potentially if you're young or managing diabetes. But then again, remember that causality, we don't really know if it's that those sweeteners are worse for diabetics or that diabetics are trying to manage their sweetener use, so they're reaching for diet sodas. You know, we don't really know. So just keep in mind that in general, of course, we want to focus on eating whole foods and making mindful choices and establishing habits that support long-term health, whether that's physiological or cognitive, and resilience around that. We also, when it comes to these kinds of nutritional studies that are observational in nature, we don't really know what's going on there. So just something to know about observational studies and their limitations, so that maybe you realize this is showing more of like a map of, okay, it seems like these health problems are clustered together, like people that are diabetic are also drinking sugar substitute more, but we don't know that that's causing the diabetes versus like they're reaching for sugar substitutes, right? So something to just kind of pause and not be too reactive about, because like here's a completely unrelated example. If you think of like noticing people who carry umbrellas, let's say they tend to also have wet shoes. Does that mean that umbrellas cause wet shoes? Of course not. It's the rain that explains both. So epidemiology can spot the umbrella and the wet shoe connection, but it can't tell us what's really causing what. And in fact, it might be something that's neither the shoe nor the umbrella, if that makes sense. So I'll link to that one. But the other article was, I think, a little better. And it was about our so-called preoccupation with protein intake. I think in general, this piece is an interesting one because it pushes back on our kind of current cultural obsession with protein, and in particular, getting protein from ultra-processed sources. So this does tie a little bit into the last article of, you know, of course, whole food sources are always going to be better. We all know that, but we also know protein matters. And so recently, if you've like existed in America and increasingly the world, because we tend to export these trends globally, you'll notice like everything now is like protein added or optimized or whatever. So this piece is kind of challenging those strong marketing narratives around supplements and isolated spiking of protein, and kind of really calls into question, like, how robust are these really high protein recommendations? So the article author is Eric Topol, and I did look him up to make sure, like, who is this guy? Why should we care what he says? And he is a cardiologist, a geneticist, and a researcher. And he actually has a really long track record of critiquing hype in medicine. So professionally, he's a professor of molecular medicine, and his expertise is in cardiology, genomics, digital health, and evidence-based medicine. He's written widely in a lot of publications and books. And this particular article is on his personal blog, but he likes to interpret medical research kind of for the general public. And he is respected for applying a critical data-driven lens and pushing back on overhyped claims in nutrition and supplements. So pretty good source, I would say, to pay attention to. But he basically, in this article, says that there's an overblown fixation on high protein diets, especially from supplements, protein bars, powders, etc., and that some of this, you know, data supposedly that supports very high protein intake will surprise readers, because when he really digs into it, and as you'll see if you read this, the evidence is actually weaker or more mixed than what we see marketed to us. So he references several systematic reviews and meta-analyses on high protein intake research. And so I think there's some interesting critical takeaways here. First of all, I think it is just kind of interesting and good to push back against any diet trend, because really that kind of gets at diet culture writ large. And why is this a trend? Is this actually clinically evident or indicated or evidence-based? Or is it, you know, a lot of marketing and trends right now? So it's always good to wonder about those things and push back, especially if some of the people backing some of the sources stand to benefit commercially. So he does talk in particular about these protein bars that I have tried, the David bars, and I believe they are, I don't know if created by or definitely just highly promoted by Andrew Huberman and Peter Attia. And, you know, those are like some dude bros in the science, podcasty, fitness adjacent world, and they're big names, and they obviously stand to benefit and make a lot of money if they push these bars and these claims about high protein intake. So like one thing, when I go to my NSCA conferences, the very first slide of every talk, the speaker has to say, like, I'm so-and-so, this is my degree, and I have, they either have to expose, or they typically say, and I have no at current conflict of interest. And what that's showing is, like, I don't stand to benefit commercially from this study that I did that shows X, Y, or Z. Or if they do stand to benefit, then they have to say, you know, like, I'm a scientific advisor to, let's say, David Protein Bar LLC, and so, you know, FYI, because then you know as you listen, okay, he stands to benefit, so grain of salt, you know, got to think about those things when you're thinking critically. But basically, Topol in this article points out kind of like the cultural versus the evidence-based messaging around protein. So, of course, protein's importance is real, but society has recently kind of turned it into this holy grail, and it's been very much promoted and pushed by influencers and food marketers. So he scrutinizes the science a little bit and highlights that the best evidence out there from the scientific side, including meta-analyses, is often context-specific. So it might be around like supplementing for advanced age or for this particular clinical need. So there's almost no universal data and indication and recommendation for super high protein intake. So he kind of invites, as a result, since it's so specific and the research isn't really there yet, maybe we should have some skepticism of this instead of these sweeping generalizations that everybody needs upwards of 2 grams of protein per kilogram of body weight per day. And in particular, he's questioning kind of the role of protein fortified junk food, which is very much booming. And this is something, just kind of side note, Justin and I have talked a lot about in the last year as we've been tracking macros, is like, on the one hand, it's so much easier than it was the last time we did this a few years ago, because there are so many products to help you get to your protein goal. And on the other hand, we find like, wow, we're really not satisfied after eating this protein junk food. Like, if you have a protein bar and a protein shake and follow it up with like a protein brownie and a protein snack mix or cereal, I can tell you it does not hit the same as like 2 chicken breasts with a side of salad followed up with a meat stick and a hard-boiled egg. It just doesn't. It doesn't sit the same way. It makes you feel snackier. It just is not satiating in the same way, even if the grams of protein appear to be the same. So I think that's a really important thing to call out and to note, because often those processed products, even if they have high protein, they displace other nutrients from whole food sources. So whether that's fiber or micronutrients or diversity from like different plants in a salad or something, you don't want protein at the cost of all of those other very important pieces of the puzzle. So basically his tone is just suggesting that we kind of rethink this more is better, and that the pendulum might be swinging back towards more moderate or at least context specific strategies when it comes to protein. And I think that that's actually a pretty good frame. I think even, I don't remember if it was last week or the week before, but I was kind of predicting like, okay, there's been a low fat craze in the 80s. There was Atkins for low carb, and now there's keto again for low carb. But we've never really had a low protein craze. So I've been kind of predicting that that is going to be the next diet trend. I don't know if it'll go quite to the level of low protein, but I do think he's right that we're probably going to pendulum swing back towards a more moderate place, or at least a contextualized place, which I think is great because, you know, if you are an aging adult and you need to hold on to your muscle mass and you're a member of the older population, or you're on a GLP-1 like Ozempic and you're losing a lot of weight, but you again want to hold on to your muscle, I think legitimately those people really do want to elevate their protein. And even then, know that like just protein doesn't equal muscle mass. Like, you have to send your body a signal to maintain or build muscle mass. And that signal comes from strength training. So your body isn't going to just be like, hey, there's all this protein in my system, let's have muscle. That's not how it works. You have to both be eating the protein to have the building blocks, and then you got to go build. You got to go lift the weights so that your nervous system gets the message, oh shit, she needs to lift heavy things. We better keep this muscle around. Oh good, we have some bricks here from what she's eating. We can shore it up. That's really how it works. So you got to have the 1-2 punch, not just the protein, but also the training to hold on to or build with. So I think it's a good article because I think probably it's kind of like that ancient wisdom of like everything in moderation, eat real food, mostly plants, plus some protein. Probably too much of anything is not warranted or even trendy or risky or neglects nuance of some sort. So I think that it's definitely, hopefully, he's a little bit of on the early side of this. And I think anyone listening to this podcast might be too, that this is, you know, one of those emerging signs of a lower protein or at least moderate shift back to a conservative level, or not conservative, but like this is what the evidence shows. Probably anything above this, you're just going to excrete as a waste product, or it's just going to cut into other things you could be eating. So like, it's fine if you want to overeat protein, but like, just know that's probably going to come at the cost of eating more delicious fats that also help your hormone balance, or eating a little higher carb, which is great for energy and your workouts and recovery, or fitting in the fiber that you need for your gastrointestinal health and your health markers like cholesterol. So like kind of end of the day, the question would be why do that? Other than like, you've been influenced by bro science, right? So, you know, do your research, figure out what your goal really is. Understand that if it includes building or maintaining muscle, you need to add the component of weightlifting. It's not just eating protein. And then really try to think of balance over extremes and questioning the evidence that's actually out there. And also, you know, there is, I think, an argument to be made. He doesn't get into this as much because he is more on the science side. And he talks just a little bit about how, like, going back to bodybuilding to kind of full circle back to the start of the episode, bodybuilders really do promote super high protein. And like, granted, they tend to also use performance enhancing drugs. So huge confounder. But for natural bodybuilders who find success with that, you do kind of want to question like, oh, do they know something that isn't yet established in the science? Because that can be a thing too. Like I can tell you as somebody who does peer review for a scientific journal from NSCA, when I do peer review, it will often be like months to a year before that study is published. So the actual, like what the science says is often outdated by the time that somebody has figured out like, well, what evidence shows when I'm working with people or when I'm experimenting with my own body is that this works, but science doesn't back that up. And it could be science doesn't back it up, or it could be science doesn't back it up yet. Because, you know, science should be very structured, should be peer reviewed, should be rigorous. So it might take longer for the science to catch up with the evidence. And that's also just kind of a tension and a trade-off that we have to be aware of while we kind of anchor on the bigger conversation that, yes, protein is important, but maybe we can question some of these extremes and not just be chasing macros, but thinking about that whole food approach that has some nuance involved. So yeah, I'll link to that one in the show notes as well. It's a good read on kind of what data there is on high protein diets, like the bars and supplements and powders, and how maybe it's not as much as you would think. And that may or may not influence how much you prioritize protein. I do think like these days in America, most people are probably getting plenty. A couple years ago, I don't think I would have said that. I think I would have said most people were under. But given the prevalence of all this protein, ultra processed kind of junk food that's out there, I think most people probably get enough. But it's either the problem I would say with it now is now they're like overeating, period, because it's more calories than they need, or it's cutting into other foods that could create more balance or satiation and therefore maybe not worth it at the level that they're consuming it, if that makes sense. All right. Well, that brings us to thinking of that article that we just talked about with the eating protein and how just eating protein in and of itself is not enough to maintain or build muscle. You have to send your body the signal that you need to do hard things and that requires strength. I just want to remind you as we close out about my strength training program. So Build with Becky is a full body program. It gives you complete autonomy to set up and work out wherever you want, whenever you want, with whatever equipment you prefer, and kind of at different levels. So every single movement in each workout, which each workout, like I said, is full body, you'll push, you'll pull, you'll hinge, you'll squat. You'll get all the major movement patterns in. But let's say you're talking about the squat. Maybe if you're getting started and you're at home, maybe you're going to start with option 3 and just do bodyweight squats or maybe a banded squat. And then maybe if a couple weeks in, you feel ready to add some resistance. You might pick up a dumbbell, could still be at home, could be at the gym. You could be traveling, hotel gym, whatever's available to you. And then maybe after a few months of that, you're doing a heavy enough dumbbell, like maybe you're getting up to a 40-pound dumbbell and you realize, oh, the barbell's 45 pounds. it might actually be easier to do an empty barbell than to do a really heavy dumbbell. Let's try that out. That would be option one. So every single movement pattern, whether it's squat, hinge, push, or pull, you'll see option one, barbell, heavier. Since it's heavier, you'll do less reps and you'll be building strength. Option two, dumbbell, sometimes bands, and that will be some more reps because it's lighter. You'll be building a bigger muscle. Hypertrophy is really the adaptation there. And then body weight and band, option three, it's the least weight, so you'll be doing the most reps. So that's a little bit more like you're adapting to muscular endurance. And that is a really good way to start. You want to be able to get some endurance before you're bumping up and adding some more resistance, before you're bumping up more and going harder. So I do recommend kind of starting with option three or two, depending on where you like to work out. If you like to work out at home, probably option three. If you have some dumbbells, you can definitely do some option two. And then option two is great at any kind of gym, or if you have the equipment at home, that's great too. That works. And then option one, you can do at home if you have like a squat rack and the equipment. But for most folks, it's going to probably be in a gym. So it just kind of depends on you. The current program is called Strength Synergy. And the first day, you focus on the deadlift and the bench press. The second day, the squat and the overhead press. And the third day, the hip thrust and the row. I'll link to all this in the show notes. And if you're interested, just know when you sign up for the program, you get about 5 to 10 onboarding emails over the course of a couple weeks. And if you just carefully read and follow those, it gets you set up. But if you have any questions at all at any point, never hesitate to reach out to me, Becky@betterwithbecky.com. Or if it's a question for the podcast, feel free to reach out at podcast@betterwithbecky.com. Until next time, thank you so much for joining me on this journey to a stronger self and a better life. See you next time.